Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Boss Blues podcast. This is Raynard Frost. Just wanted to say, hope you folks all had a really good Thanksgiving. Last week, we didn't do an episode because of the holidays, so we all enjoyed that and hope you did too. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Despain and Killam.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And today, we are going to not do a player play. But instead, we're going to do a demo of, I believe, Volrath's game, Exnor. We watched Despain play through a good portion of the demo, so we've got some thoughts on that. And today's topic is also going to be about exploration. But before we get into that, we're going to jump straight into talking about the demo. Despain, give us a good summary of the game.
All right. Today, we are going to be reviewing the Exnor demo. You guys can find it on the RPG Maker forums in the project section. It was made by Volrath and Artbane, who made the very popular Master of the Wind on RPG Maker XP, which is considered by a lot of people to be the best RPG Maker XP game out there. I consider it very, very good myself. So we're expecting a lot of good things from Exnor because it was made by the same creators. It's their follow-up game, and it's a very, very different feel. So, Raynard, do you want to dive into your thoughts about this?
Sure. To start, I thought the tone, I couldn't really take it seriously. I wasn't a personal fan of how they did stuff, because within the first 10 minutes, I'm going to buy buffalo wings instead of committing suicide, so it wasn't really my flavor. I mean, some people may enjoy it, but it didn't really rub me the right way. My personal gripe with the game is that it really did its intro very poorly. It wasn't a very strong start. It tries to convey a whole ton of information from the get-go that can be explained later on through the game because it doesn't have any pertinence to what's going on right then. We spent a half hour watching Despain play this, and we didn't really get into core gameplay in that time, and there wasn't going to be more core gameplay until another 30 minutes past where we stopped. With the intro, it really did something poorly that I thought could have been done better, where instead of having all this information and having all these tutorials that we don't get to use right away, instead it should start straight to the first mystery you have to solve, which is trying to find somebody's missing locket. The game should start where I walk into the wings place, talk to my friends, and then the dude's like, hey, we need to find this locket. Can you check it out? That goes straight into gameplay. That establishes a few beginning characters, and then I can start to learn all the gameplay stuff. All the other stuff about being depressed, the politics thing, all of this other information can be conveyed later on when I actually care.
Yeah, the way the game...
I've gotten invested.
The way the game currently opens is the main character is about to commit suicide, and then he changes his mind because it's 40 Cent Wing Night at Bubba's. So he goes there, gets some wings, then he gets drunk, goes back to his apartment, and then in the morning you wake up, you meet some guy, you go on a doctor's appointment, then you go back to Bubba's, and then the game starts where you get your first quest. And my suggestion was, we all felt this way, was that the whole thing could be condensed into one sequence that really puts the player into the action from the start.
Yeah. Like, after you walk away from committing suicide, you get quote-unquote mugged, and he introduces combat, which you don't get to use for another hour. If you're going to have a tutorial for a gameplay feature, you tell me the tutorial about it right when I'm about to use it. You also, when you go to the doctor's appointment, you introduce this anxiety meter, which we didn't get to use until, as Despain said, it was going to kick in after we stopped playing. But at that point, me and Killam were just... we were bored, we were tired, we just didn't want to deal with this anymore. We did not care, we were not invested, the gameplay didn't draw us in. It really didn't hook us. If they had started right when I've got that first mystery of finding the locket, and then I get to introduce the anxiety meter, and then get to use it, and then later on introduce the combat, and then get to use the combat. I mean, if you're going to have a tutorial, teach us about a gameplay feature before we actually get to use it a lot. Don't introduce it way early in the game and then not use it for another hour, because that's really frustrating. So that's my thoughts on the game. Just a bit of as far as that beginning demo, it needs a better hook. Introduce gameplay mechanics right before we get to use them. So I'm going to transfer this over to Killam. What are your thoughts?
All right, my criticism as for the intro goes as far as yours. I really didn't care about the characters. Like, oh, someone's going to commit suicide. Why do I care? How does it relate? But what really grabbed me was the characters. At first, I was expecting a bland RTP, RPG Maker game because of the graphics. But the characters are a lot more than that, which I found impressive. I actually found myself being astonished by how well-written they were. From what I took of it, it was very different and very new. But the big problem with this game is the graphical presentation and the whole aesthetics. It doesn't work with the characters. It looks so... it's chibi, and with these games, you need to work with graphics. You need to make sure they're top-notch so they can convey the story better. Because the maps, like the bank, was very, very realistic, but the RTP made it look... God damn it.
Okay. No, but I can understand where you're coming from. It's the art. You're trying to do a mature theme with the game, and the graphics don't really look mature.
Yeah,
I have to add that I did talk to Artbane a little bit about this, and they really do hate the RTP graphics for this. They recognize the same issue, but that's just what's available to them at the time. They're hoping to maybe put some funding together to try to get some new graphics, and it's something that they recognize. But that's one of the reasons why it's just a demo and not a full game. They're dealing with a lot of placeholder stuff right now.
Yeah.
Especially in terms of the tile sets, too. They did mention that they're going to be using the new future tile sets that were just released recently. So their game is definitely going to be spicier looking in the near future.
Yeah, but the main problem, like, the characters are supposed to be mature, but they're chibi style, and I can't take that seriously, which, honestly...
No, I can take the chibi style seriously with the mature stuff. It was just the rape faces with the RTP-generated face sets that really irked me.
That's true.
Yeah, like, the chibi character sets, that doesn't bother me at all.
That, I don't know.
That didn't annoy me with the chibi. It was mostly the face sets that were just kind of...
Ugh. Yeah, the generative faces always just look bad, but I'm pretty sure they're going to have original art for those in the future.
Yeah, if they put in... Honestly, it's just this game could be better if they tightened up the ending and they put in custom art.
Yeah, custom art would actually take a lot. It would really help the game out tremendously for what it's trying to go for.
These guys watched me play the game for about... half an hour, 40 minutes. We didn't get very far because the game has a very slow intro, and we didn't even take the slowest route. There's a lot of exploration that you could be doing, but we took the bus stops and stuff like that instead of getting lost in the city. I, however, have played an earlier version of the demo before them, and I got significantly farther. I got to the point where you're actually using the gun system, where there's actually a dungeon. And when you can actually get that far into the game, you start to be really impressed by it. These guys are well known for having really good dungeon designs. That was one of the great highlights of Master of the Wind. And it doesn't disappoint here. There's some really cool stuff in the dungeons, some really cool puzzles where you have to put pipes together, things like that. And the battle system, it has its glitches. It has some balance flaws, but pretty much everything does in the early stages like that. And for the most part, it felt pretty solid. But you have to get to that point, which is where the game does fall short. Because the highlight of the game doesn't come for 45 minutes to an hour into it, and up until that, it's just talking and walking.
Yeah. There's no hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to convey a lot of information from the get-go. It's what we've talked about in our previous podcasts, where you have to get to the point. You know, this to me was the equivalent of scrolling text, where you're just conveying a whole ton of information from the get-go, when instead it should be sprinkled on later on. Like, the scenes they did in the beginning would have been better, or would have been fine as is, if they were introduced later on in the game, when I'm actually invested in these characters, when I've actually gotten more established in the world through my own devices, not just stuff told to me.
Yeah.
I should be able to get straight into gameplay, explore some stuff, want to find out what happens next at that point, once I've actually gotten to play. So, let's move on to our next topic, because I believe we've pretty much covered this demo for a bit.
Well,
my thoughts are, it just needs a bit more polish, tighten up the ending and all that. Killam, what are your final thoughts about this demo?
Again, you can't really do anything about the graphics now, because I understand that's a huge investment, but the intro, you need the hook. There was no hook. There was absolutely nothing that made me want to play the game more, so work on the intro a lot, and that's really all I have to say.
Yeah, I would say that the game is really cool once you get into it. And it's definitely worth playing, or checking out at least. But at the same time, I totally agree with these guys that the time it takes for you to get into it can be seriously condensed. And, like I said before, you can't help but compare this game to the previous game by these guys, Master of the Wind, which was fantastic. And I think that the big reason that there's a strong disconnect here, that we're not feeling this game as much, is because of the opening. When you played Master of the Wind, the game really started strong. You started off with two characters running into a castle after a vampire, and you were, right off the bat, you were in the middle of this awesome dungeon that was really well designed and really unique for RPG Maker at the time.
See, and that sounds interesting.
That sounds great, and they did it really well. Right off the bat, you're totally sucked into the game. You want to just keep going. X-Noir doesn't have that from the start. It doesn't have a hook like that that makes you just say, wow, I can't put this game down. It almost actually tells you to put the game down because it's such a slow-moving introduction. So, exactly. But when you actually get into the game, it's really good. So I would just really want to see this game condensed more. Maybe even cut off the first hour of gameplay and just start you off in the dungeon, if possible. Because that kind of thing can really make you want to play the game. So I think that's what we've got for the review here. So let's talk about today's topic. It is something that I really, really like to talk about, or at least like to play in games. And we're going to be talking about exploration. And there's a lot of ways to look at exploration, especially in RPG Maker context. There's the whole debate of linearity versus non-linearity, and there's the whole debate of, you know, when exploration should be necessary to the plot and when it should be extra. And we're going to be going deep in a lot of these things in the future. So now that I've spoken a little bit about what we're going to be talking about, let's start things off with Killam, and what are your thoughts on exploration?
Well, in RPGs in general, one of the biggest ways to implement exploration is through side quests. And where a lot of games fall short now is that side quests are just find and retrieve an item, like Final Fantasy XIII 2. That was all the side quests. I lost something, go find it. Side quests should be an alternative to the main story where you explore the surroundings that are not presented in the main story.
Yeah, definitely make it so it fleshes out the story and the world and not just a find X or kill X amount of Y.
Yeah, it goes back to world immersion, one of our previous discussions, where we talked about a great way to make the world feel larger than just the hero's primary quest is to have other elements of the world that seem alive and that you can interact with.
Yeah, definitely storytelling via gameplay instead of just having side quests that eat up time. Your side quest for side quests to actually be exploration, is it has to be something that would take you to a new area or that helps expand the world, because you're exploring more of this world that you're in, and side quests are a great way to do that, but it's also, they can be easily fudged if you take the lazy MMO route about it.
Yeah, side quests shouldn't be like a mission orientated, like I said before, the find and retrieve. Side quests should be towards a side, obviously, where you want to explore the world. You're not forced to do it.
Can you think of a good example from a game that you've played where...
Actually, yeah, I can. I doubt many of you have played it, but the Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky game had a lot of decent side quests because they weren't actually... They didn't tell you what to do. They just gave you a whole world, and then they gave you a little route to go through, and then if you decided to branch off from that route, you would discover all these ancient towers and everything that no one told you about, and then you would find missions in there, and that's how they did it.
Yeah. You go and explore on your own, and then you get the side quest that way. But I'm a fan of having side quests being told to you from a central hub, where at least some nudge to go, hey, there's this side area you can explore and there's something to do here. I'm a personal fan of that, where at least the villagers or other stuff will talk about, oh, there's this area, go explore that. I mean, one thing that I kind of view as a side game, or in the Persona games, the social links. I mean, they're partially part of the main game, but at the same time, they also come up with side quests because you don't have to maximize them or do all of them. And they really are really great examples of fleshing out characters and getting to know more about the characters and the world you're in. It's totally optional, but it does help a lot.
When you're talking about side quests to flesh out characters, I can't help but mention Majora's Mask and the Bomber's Notebook. So much of the game is all about the side quests and interacting with your NPCs and getting to know them over the course of the 3 days that the game takes place in. And what you said about the central hub for the side quests, a lot of it takes place in the Clock Town, but because of the three-day mechanic, characters move around, they're in different places, they have their lives, and the exploration comes not just from finding new areas, but from finding the same areas being used in new ways, or finding new characters in the areas that you've already been to, doing different things.
Yeah, no, those are really good examples of doing side quest stuff, is having all of that stuff to do on a schedule, but also with Majora's Mask, you could warp back through time and get to different parts. So you didn't have to feel rushed about which part you'd want to explore. You could always warp back a bit and then explore somebody else's storyline. So
yeah,
it really helped make the game feel more expansive.
Yeah, that's a good point about exploration, is that when you want the player to explore, you want to give them the freedom to explore, you also have to give them the time to explore.
Yeah.
In a lot of games, you're just rushing the player forward through this single game, but once in a while you have to let him stop and really get a chance to spend his own time doing whatever he wants to do. Let him play the game in his own way, let him explore the world, and then give him a more leisurely pace in which he really has a chance to do that. A lot of games do that, like, before the final boss, you'll have a chance to go explore the world and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't like that, because
at that point, you're almost done, you don't really even care. You should be able to have bits of, here, take some time to just explore the world, sprinkled throughout the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all the Tales of games have that, like, there's a huge calamity, everyone's gonna die, oh, there's side quests now, you wanna go to a beach? You can go to a beach. And then it's just, you don't wanna go because you wanna beat the game, you wanna save the world.
Yeah. Final Fantasy VII. Oh, look, giant meteor in the sky. Hey, let's go check out that farm we were
talking about. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go check out that all those ultimate weapons and see what the hell to deal with that.
Yeah. Oh, that meteor will take its time.
We have until the final boss. Don't worry, we're good.
Yeah. It's not like there's a time limit. Yeah, no. That's... You should be able to explore all that content before the catastrophic event occurs. Especially because it just kind of breaks the immersion. Because you think, oh crap, there's this thing that's going to happen, we don't have a lot of time. And then they go, wait, no, you have to trigger this event to bring about the apocalypse, so don't worry about it.
But not too much, not too early in the game either, though, I would say, because if there's too much open at once, the player can get very quickly overwhelmed. So I think that exploration is all about, the more you progress in the game, the more opportunities to explore that there are.
Yeah, you sprinkle it throughout it. I'm not saying, yes, you know, finish your first dungeon, explore the rest of the world. I'm saying you get to a certain point in the game early on, and then you have a bit of exploration you can do, and then you progress to the next section, there's a bit more, and then more and more. Just don't save all of it for the end.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about fun thing about collectibles.
You want to go on a tangent for side quests real quick? We can, have to implement them?
Go.
All right, now, for implementing them in your game, there are a lot of ways. My personal favorite is I also use the combination of the central hub where people tell you, like, they give you hints like, oh, you should go there. But I also try to have, like, a completely optional dungeon that no one tells you about that you find on your own. And then you go through that, you, like, uncover more of the world's history and everything like that. But, yeah, I use the combination of the two. I use both actual exploration and you find stuff on your own and a central hub.
Yeah, those are good ways of implementing them. I want to go on a tangent about a fun thing to do for exploration, not just side quests, are collectibles. Having items that you can just pick up and either they'll give you better abilities or it's just you're picking these up to go buy stuff. Some good examples of that are Banjo-Kazooie, Psychonauts, Jack and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank. A lot of platforming games do this, but at the same time, you could also do this with RPGs. I mean, Legend of Zelda has the later ones have collectible items like finding golden bugs and all that stuff. And those are really good ways that they're kind of just a reward that you can give somebody for exploring. It's, oh, you found this really hidden niche in the wall. Here's this item that is really rare, and if you collect X amount of these items, you get this gameplay feature or something like that. Or it's just, you know, trying as an achievement in and of itself. It's just try and find all of these hidden items. They don't really have a purpose. They're just there to collect.
Yeah, I do that in my game. I have a lot of little collectible things here and there, but it's not the focus of the game. There's a lot of platformers where the collectibles can really overwhelm you, and people say it takes away from the game experience. But in RPGs, I think it's a good idea to put collectibles as an option that aren't necessarily necessary, but it gives the player something else to do with his time while he's exploring. In my game, there's a few different types of collectibles. One of them is that At one point in the game, you get a shovel item, and in different areas of the game, you know, you're just walking around the forest or something, and you see a little patch of dirt on the ground, and for a while, you don't really understand it. You check it out, and it says there's a patch of dirt on the ground. But later on, you get a shovel, and whenever you see one of those spaces, you can dig it up, and you can get gold, or you can get a rock or something that you can end up selling for money. So the idea is just that collectibles are a good way to put more interactivity throughout your game world. So instead of your player just going from one area to another, he can actually explore that area, and he's rewarded for doing so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in my game, I also have collectibles where I try and make them as story-relevant as possible. Like I talked about in a previous episode, there are notes you can find where somebody who's further along in the dungeon tells you about their experiences, but those also count as collectibles. There's a set amount of them in each section of the tower, and if you find all of them, it's just, okay, cool, you found all these. But also, by finding them when they're hidden, is they also help flesh out the world and flesh out more about what's going on. And then there's other collectibles that I have that I find also flesh it out, because it helps unlock what has happened here.
Yeah, so. I did the same thing with my game, too. I flesh out more of the world rather than the whole gameplay with the collectibles. Like, you go through a tower, the origin, whatever that created the world, and you, like, find out stuff. You get a collectible, and you find out more information about the world. It's not a gameplay gimmick, but it helps flesh out the world and really immerses you.
It starts off as a gameplay gimmick, but by having it flesh out the world, you take it beyond that.
Yeah, it just starts off as an extra dungeon, basically. But then, if you explore it more, you get to find out more stuff, and if that interests you, you can do it.
Yeah. Those are all fun things to do with collectibles and exploring your game. So, Despin, what are some of your thoughts on exploration?
Well, going back to collectibles just a little bit, I want to add that it's important to be able to reward the player for doing what he wants to do. So if a player wants to explore, and he finds little rewards here and there, it's a really cool thing. Collectibles don't just have to be, you know, get 100 coins to unlock a new thing. It can be really easy stuff, just like putting regular treasure chests with potions, that kind of thing. If you have, like, a area in your game, and your player is wandering around, and he stumbles across this new pathway, and at the end of the path there's a treasure chest with a cool weapon in it or something, he still feels rewarded. He feels like the time he spent exploring that area was worth it. But don't put, like, a whole huge path, and then at the end he's rewarded with a simple potion that he could have bought in a shop, because then he feels like it was a waste of his time.
Well, exactly. That's kind of tricky, because you don't want to grant an item that's too powerful, though, that detracts from this main story. It's a really fine line between something that someone cares about and something that's actually useful.
I think that's more of a balancing issue and less having to do with the idea of give the player a reward that's worth the time he puts into getting that reward.
Oh yeah, it is, but you don't want to make it like a huge reward. You want to make it a reward, but not like a game breaker.
Well, what I do is I just make it where if you explore and you check out a side area, you find the next level upgrade to their equipment, where it's just, oh, you can buy this, but if you explore and you find it, some of your characters will be able to get their weapon without having to go and spend money on it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great way to do it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that way, if you actually explore, you can get a majority of your upgrades without having to actually purchase them. You can save your money to buy more recovery items or invest it in
other areas. And it's not a gameplay breaker, because you can just get those items anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, so I have a few more things to talk about exploration. The first one is we've talked a lot about exploration in the wilderness and in dungeons, and I want to talk a little bit about exploring towns, exploring characters, going in and out of people's houses, and the kind of depth that you can get into that. Like I mentioned before, Majora's Mask, and you can go into people's houses, and different characters are in different places at different times, and there's a lot of potential for serious depth in exploring single areas. You can actually put a lot into a single area that people don't necessarily think about right away. I play a lot of RPG Maker games where you go into a town, there's a couple houses, maybe you can get some money out of somebody's sock drawer, and you go to the inn, heal up, and then you leave, and that's pretty much all there is. There's not much of a personality to the town itself, there's not much incentive to stay in the town and check it out. But I think that towns and cities can give a game designer tremendous opportunity to add elements for exploration and opportunities for the player to find some really cool stuff.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, just think about simple things, like, say you're in an inn, and maybe, you know, you find a secret passageway that brings you to some catacombs underground. It doesn't have to be large, but it can add a tremendous amount of gameplay, and the player can feel like, oh, wow, I found something really cool down here, and maybe he gets
an item. Yeah, the early Final Fantasies did that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy VI, they would have hidden walls, and you could go through them, and then you just find, like, hidden rooms with treasure, or in one inn where there were girls that would dance on stage, you could find this hidden pathway that brought you to their dressing room and stuff like that.
Remember that one.
Exactly. Yep. That's a great kind of thing. And characters, too. Exploration, like I mentioned before, it doesn't have to be about physical exploration. It can be about other things. Like, say you come back to one place with an item that a character was talking about, give it to him, and then you've explored the game to find the item. Then when you come back and the character gives you some kind of maybe an item reward, maybe gold, maybe he gives more insight into his character, maybe he moves out of the way so you can find a special room or something. And it's all about, when I play a game, I like to have a lot to do in less areas rather than a lot of areas with less to do in them. Which is probably the reason why Majora's Mask is one of my favorite games of all time, because there's so much content crammed into a world that, by a lot of RPG standards, would seem small. But it's huge because of the amount of things that you can do in the areas.
I definitely agree with that philosophy, is having more to do in smaller areas. You don't need, you know, 20 towns if half of your towns you just go in, heal, buy upgrades, and then walk out. You should just have... You know, I try with my own game design, or when I tell people tips on improving their games, is you want to make every aspect of your game have the maximum amount of impact as possible. If you have a town, different areas of that town should have a purpose. I mean, you have a big town, have people sit there, have side quests they can do with it, have, you know, characters going about their day, it's sort of thankless because you will have the certain type of player who will just do the critical path, get their stuff, and go. But there are other types of players, you know, like myself and I'm sure several other people, where they will actually talk to every person in town, find out all this side stuff. And when you put forth that effort, it really caters to those kind of players, and they're really thankful for that. I mean, I know I am when I go around and I talk to what the NPCs have, and they actually have something meaningful to say. I'm like, you know, wow. That was an awesome detail. I'm glad they threw that in there.
Yeah, I agree completely with you have to make your towns relevant to the story and the setting. Don't have a town just because you want a little inn so your characters can heal. Have a town because it's supposed to be there, like a trading town, whatever you want. And
sort of. It's you can, if you do need a town there where you just need, I need an inn so they can heal, do that.
Well, no, you don't have to.
Then you have an extra excuse to add more to it.
I don't agree with that. You can easily just have like a little hut or like a little cabin, and someone's like renting it out for an inn.
Pokemon does that a lot.
Pokemon does that with that thing. No, but I'm saying if you need that inn there for them to heal, take that as an opportunity to flesh out that town, add story to it. Just don't leave it. I agree. Don't leave it at just an inn where you need to heal. You can turn that. You can take that inn that you need to do and turn it into a town with its own story.
Yeah,
but if it doesn't have any relevance to the plot aside from an inn, it's really hard to do that.
No, as in, it starts off as an inn. I'm saying that you can take that as an opportunity to flesh it out and make it relevant to the plot. Yeah.
To give the player more opportunity to explore the world.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, so what we're saying here is pretty much that you don't need a huge, sprawling world to make the world seem big and alive. You can actually do it in a small area by maximizing the player's ability to interact with the game.
And one more thing, if you guys don't mind. NPCs, I said it last week too, or last podcast, they really are so underlooked, but they can add so much immersion to the game. Your NPCs are people, and like Despain said, they're the main characters of their story, so you want to make them relevant. You want to have each NPC have its own thing, and you talk to them, you get more information about the world, about their life, whatever. Little bits like that really help flesh out everything.
That leads me to the next point that I wanted to talk about when it comes to exploration, is it's totally possible to put NPCs out there in the world, not just in towns. Like I said before, Majora's Mask, they actually do this. You can be wandering around in the swamp, and you can find somebody out there looking for mushrooms or something. And when it's actually really rewarding to be exploring and then find some other human out there in some far out location, and he's telling you that he's doing something, and then you can say, well, maybe I can help this guy with this, or maybe I can get there first, you know? And it gives the player some more incentive to explore, and it encourages the player to explore, which is the point that I wanted to make before I lead into my next topic, is that if your game is exploration heavy, you need to find a way to encourage the player to explore or train the player to be able to use his own eyes and his own experiences to discover the way the world works. Now, this isn't going to be true for every game. Some games are a lot more light on exploration, some games are heavier, but the more your game encourages the player to explore, I think the more your game...
It'll be totally richer for it. I mean, you're definitely going to have, and if you put forth those little extra details that not only encourages the player to explore, but it makes them want to explore. I mean, if you've got that guy in the swamp that suddenly turns that swamp full of monsters into, oh, well, why is this guy here? I want to know more about this. Then he's got his little story, and then he can go, hey, go find mushrooms for me. And then you sit there and you go around, you find mushrooms, you come back, you find out, what does he want with these mushrooms for? And you could just leave it as, all right, thanks, find me more mushrooms, I'll give you some money. Or you can go, well, I need these mushrooms because I want to heal my sick, such and such. You know, you can make a story out of it. So definitely, if you're going to do exploration in your game, take every small gameplay detail and make it an opportunity to tell more about your world instead of just having these huge elaborate cutscenes that force this info down people's throats. Instead, just take it as these side things you can do.
Yeah, I actually really, really like that example of – because how many times when you're playing an RPG – is someone ever in a dungeon besides monsters? Hardly ever. There are no NPCs in dungeons, right? So you put them in dungeons and it fleshes them out as a person.
Yeah. It's like, oh, why are they in this dungeon? Oh, it's because of this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mentioned that in my article about NPCs. I talk about how in Twilight Princess, there was a whole dungeon that revolved around that Yeti couple, and they were actually active members of the dungeon, and it felt really unique.
Yeah, I really like that dungeon because...
Oh, man, that hookshot. I hate that shit.
That's one thing I'm doing in my game is part of the collectibles is you'll find certain members of the previous expedition who kind of got left behind, and you'll either find them like dead or dying, or you'll be able to – or hopefully be able to save them. So that's instead – well, you'll also find notes, but these are other side collectibles to things. I'm turning NPCs into collectibles.
That sounds kind of wrong, but okay.
Well, I mean, why does that sound wrong? Like, explain.
I know.
It reminds me of just the way you worded it. You know, in Twilight Princess, again, Link finds that chicken lady, and he puts it in his item bag, and she's an item, even though she's an actual character.
Well, yeah, no.
Or in Majora's Mask, he puts the Deku princess, he puts her in a bottle, and carries her around with him.
NPCs are people, too.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Turn them into collectible in the sense of they are part of, oh, I'm going to find this. Oh, I found this person. Yeah. I have proof of what happened to
them.
They
give the player incentive to play more of the game instead of just doing his thing. All right, so I want to talk a little, like I said before, about encouraging or training the player to explore. I want to talk about good ways to do that in terms of designing the game and designing the maps in your game. It's not difficult to put a little pathway to the side where the player can say, oh, I can go this way or this way. But I think it's very possible where when you're playing a game to be overwhelmed if there are too many choices. So I think back to Pokemon, where you have alternate paths, but you go there and there's a bush that you can't cut down just yet. But you know you can come back and you can remember it in your mind, oh yeah, I can go this way once I find this thing. Or same thing in The Legend of Zelda, where you come back with an item, you can say, oh, you know, now I have this item, now I remember that there was an area where this thing was, I could go back and do that now.
I'm not a big fan of those, personally. I prefer to be able to do everything in one go-through. Like, I hate having to go back to a previous area to unlock stuff, because I'll just generally forget about it, or I'll sit there and I'll go, well, it's not important enough, because important, I should have been able to do it from the beginning.
Well, I'm not talking about necessarily areas that are necessary, or even if they are necessary, I'm talking about the kind of games where the player is going to be going back there anyway. Like, say he has to go to a... I mean, especially in an RPG kind of world where you're moving around. It's not just like a straightforward go here, go here, go here.
I'm talking about personally with Pokemon. Every time I find a tree I couldn't cut and I didn't have access to cut from there, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, oh, crap, now I want to know what's here. I'm going to have to come all the way back here. I'm going to have to wait till I get fly and then I come back and it's just some item that I really didn't need in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with him. I don't like that at
all. Was actually my next point. The fly mechanic is totally necessary in a game with a lot of exploration. Being able to return to areas very quickly, it makes backtracking possible, because otherwise people would just get really frustrated with it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it makes this kind of thing that I'm talking about, like these kind of secrets, you can go back to them really, really easily without having to really go through hurdles. You can just teleport there.
If you are going to have backtracking like that, definitely have a way for either I can manually note it or have it where the game keeps track of it for me. Because when I would play through, you know, Gold and Silver or Heart Gold and Soul Silver for Pokemon, is I could mark little – I could go to the map and I could put little indicators. So every time I found a berry tree, I would basically – I would harvest it and then plant a new berry and then water it. But I would keep an indicator of, oh, there's this berry tree. I need to come back to this point so I can deal with this tree again. Otherwise, I would just forget it existed.
Yeah.
Well, for me, backtracking has to be a lot – it has to have a huge reward because you're going to a place you've already been to, so it's not as important. So the reward has to be gigantic to have the player actually care.
For me, the reward can be as little as finding a new area. Like, it, and I'm not talking about full-on backtracking. I'm talking about teleporting. In Ocarina of Time, they do this a lot. You know, you have the songs where you can go to any town or dungeon really quickly. And I really think about the inside the volcano, inside Death Mountain. When you're an adult, you go in there and you learn the song, right? And so when you're a kid, you play the same song, go back there, and you get deeper into the volcano than you ever could have before because you didn't have the fire tunic to go that deep. And suddenly you can explore a few, you know, some areas that you couldn't access before because you come back to them in a different way.
Yeah. Those ways are good of returning to previous areas because you're approaching them in a new way.
Exactly.
And there's certain areas that were inaccessible before. But I also, on the other hand, I would like to be able to just explore all of it in a single go-through. Like, where some games will have it where, oh, you can go through this dungeon, and I think Zelda is a chief offender in this, is where you'll go through a dungeon and you finish the dungeon, but you can't explore it or get all the items in that single run-through. You have to go find a newer item and then go back to that previous dungeon to explore it. I'm like, no. I've already done that dungeon.
I'm okay with those because those kind of items are never necessary to complete the game. Those are for the people who want to 100% the game. They go back and get their Gold Skull Tula tokens and stuff like that. It's added gameplay. It's extra fun, and it doesn't take away from the game in any way. So I would actually encourage that because there are people who like it. And even if people
I'm saying I should be able to get all of that in my single run through of the dungeon. I don't want to have to go back. Because I want to collect everything, but I want to collect everything on a single pass.
Yeah, there's a fine
line. I don't want to have to backtrack to get my collectibles.
Yeah, there's a fine line between expansive and annoying, which is what I think Rainer's trying to say. And I feel the same way. I don't want to go back to a place for one little tiny thing just for 100%.
But some people might, and I think that's important to keep track of.
You have different audiences. You don't have to. You can cater towards that. I mean, if somebody wants to collect everything and they can collect it on a single playthrough, that's awesome. There was one game I was playing that did that where – oh, no, it was I was playing Pokemon Black and White. And or Black 2 and White 2. And in that, your Pokedex will unlock – every time you run into a new Pokemon, it'll track it in your Pokedex in this habitat mode. And it'll say, oh, you found this many. And when you find all of them in a zone, you get a little stamp that says you found all these or you've caught all these. And early on, you can give Pokemon moves because you don't need badges to use the hidden machines anymore. You can just give them those moves, trade the Pokemon over. But until you actually get those hidden machines in the game, the Pokedex doesn't track whether you got them through fishing or you got it through surfing or all that. It doesn't track those until you actually get the item later on. Or there are some zones where you can't catch all those Pokemon while you're there. You have to go further on and then backtrack or get to a hidden area thing. And I'm just like, I want to be able to catch all of them in a zone, move on, and never have to go back to that area again.
Yeah, but that's really weird. I feel like you're the one that does that.
Where I try and catch them all?
Dude, you've been like on the same area for like 2 days trying to catch everything.
Yeah, I did do that, and then I said, screw it, and I beat the game, and now I'm doing that on the other game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was just like, no, I just want to beat this game so I can unlock hard mode and then do hard mode and then collect everything and be autistic with that.
Right, so on the subject of backtracking, I want to go into my final subject for this topic, and that is about connecting maps and areas and how to bring different areas of your world together by encouraging the player to explore and find new routes. And the best example of this is the Metroid series.
Yes.
We talk about Metroid Prime a lot, and something that I really love about the Metroid Prime series is that you can be exploring in an area, right? And then you go through some door or some side tunnel, and you find out, hey, this leads to an area that I've already been before. I just discovered a cool shortcut that I'll have accessible to me in the future. And not only does it make shortcuts possible, not only does it make backtracking a lot simpler, it makes the whole world feel more interconnected, and it brings the player more into the world experience.
Yeah, I agree. It's Metroid and Zelda are huge examples of doing that. But I think a lot of RPGs should take that route where you have different zones, and through exploring one zone, you get to find a new hidden area of a previous zone.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And that was actually one of my biggest criticisms with Skyward Sword, because you couldn't travel from one area to the next, even through secret passages. You had to travel back up to the sky and back down and go into a different area.
Yeah. 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 I remember Link to the Past had some good zones about that, where there was, especially with Death Mountain, where there were some areas of Death Mountain that you couldn't access unless you came in a certain way near the base. Like, trying to find the magic cape was, you know, you had to go to a graveyard, which you couldn't move the tombstone until after a certain point, or once you got a certain item, and then you go back there and you push the tombstone and you get this magic cape. And once you've got this magic cape, it lets you explore so many more areas. Like, there were heart pieces where you couldn't get past this bouncing thing unless you had the magic cape. So you could walk through those objects without interacting with you. Just having stuff like that really fleshed out everything.
Feels really cool to discover a new area or a new connection. As a player, you just think, wow, so it connects that way, and it just clicks in your mind, and it's satisfying. It's really satisfying.
Well, it's also really hard to try to do that into an RPG Maker game, because, like Metroid Prime, for example, it's interconnected, right? But it's also condensed. It's like the whole world is just one world, but for a lot of RPGs, the world is really vast, so you can't really have it as interconnected with everything as you want.
But you can, just don't make your world so vast. Keep it on a smaller scale, and you can do that. And that's what Despain and I were agreeing on and talking about, was that instead of having this huge expanse, instead of having it cross the whole globe, you can take the Zelda route and just take one section of the world and have it where you explore that section of the world. So you can really flesh out that smaller thing. I mean, it's kind of like taking a rubber band. The further you stretch it out, the thinner it gets.
Yes.
Whereas if you keep it more condensed, it has more depth. It's thicker. There's more stuff to do with it. You know?
That's a really good
analogy.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah. All right. So, all right, guys. I feel like we're reaching the end of this topic, at least for now. Do you have any other things to add before we move to final thoughts?
Buy Metroid Prime.
Yeah, buy Metroid Prime. It's a damn good game.
It is a good example of exploration and encouraging the player to explore, and it covers pretty much all of the things that we've talked about here. So, yeah, Metroid Prime, I can get behind that. So,
yeah,
guys, what are your final thoughts on this subject? Rainer, do you want to start?
As far as exploration goes, my final thoughts with this are just basically do more with less. It's, you know, keep it with a smaller area, but just go into more details into that area. I mean, in you don't need to have a huge world where you've got a continent and the only thing on it is a desert town and that's it. I mean, original Final Fantasies would do that. A lot of the old school RPGs would do that, where they just want to get that sense of scope by exploring a huge world, where instead I think, no, take a small area, or if you are going to do a huge world, try and only focus on those small areas. So, those are my thoughts on that. What about you, Kellen? What do you think?
All right. Again, I'm going to stress the importance of NPCs. Work on them a lot. Don't make them just irrelevant. That will really help your game out tremendously when it comes to exploration. And side quests, don't just limit them to find and retrieve. Have actual side quests relevant to the game.
All right. And my final thoughts would come back to the player experience. When you're putting exploration when you're putting exploration into your game, you should try to keep in mind how the player is going to approach it, and you should encourage the player to play the game however he wants to play it. There are going to be areas in your game where the player is going to skip over, and that's totally fine, that's totally acceptable, because there are other players who are really going to dig deep into those areas and really enjoy them. So put a little bit of everything for every type of player into your game, and exploration is a really good opportunity to put that in there. So those are our final thoughts. Last week, we presented the question of what are your experiences working with teams, and we did get a few answers. A lot of them have actually been overwhelmingly positive. Fomar said that teaming up was the best thing he ever did. Indra, who I know that she teamed up with Fomar, she also said she had a good experience. Volrath replied, who we talked about his game earlier today working with Artbane, and he worked not in a large team, but he worked with a partner on Master of the Wind, and they had some really good experiences there. We also had some feedback from people like Indanera, who worked as more of a team leader than actually as part of a team when he contracted other people to help him out with his game, and he had positive experiences on that one. The only person who really gave feedback on not working with the team was Lunaria, and she talked more about how it was stressful because she didn't have a lot of time and felt like working with the team would only bring them down because her own life was hectic and busy. And I totally get that. I can see that's one of the reasons why I like to work alone.
If you don't have enough time or if you don't have enough time or resources to dedicate to a team project and you want to work at your own pace, that's definitely a good incentive to do solo as opposed to teams. I mean, if you're going to work with a team, it's definitely a tad more stressful, even though it is very beneficial. You have to make sure you can go through for the long haul. Otherwise, you're just going to bring everybody down.
Yeah, so we do have another question for this week for you guys to answer. Raynard, do you want to throw that out there?
Yes, this week's question, as this week's podcast is about exploration, I would love to know what you guys do to implement exploration in your game. So please let us know different types of examples about how you put exploration in your games. I mean, whether or not you have collectible items, bonus areas to explore, mini quests or whatnot, just let us know, and let us know on either the RPG Maker Web podcast topic, on Twitter at Final Boss Blues, or on the FinalBossBlues.com on the podcast there. So we've got different areas for you to give us your feedback. Please let us know. And the question once again is, how do you implement exploration into your game projects?
All right, so I think that about wraps it up for this week. Thank you all for listening. This has been Despain,
Raynard Frost,
and Keelum.
All right, see you all next week.